This is Barbara Ridenour returning with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated April 15th, 2016. We'll continue with the obituaries. Evelyn Matthews Babcock, 95, of Decatur, died Tuesday, April 12th, 2016. The celebration of life will be held at noon on Sunday, April 17th, in Cross Point Community Church. Memorials are suggested to Cross Point Community Church, Decatur. The family is being served by Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home of Decatur. David L. Spark, 68, died April 11th, 2016. Graveside services with military honors will be held at 1 p.m. on Monday, April 18th, at Camp Butler National Cemetery in Springfield. Funeral arrangements have been entrusted to Flanner and Buchanan Washington Park East. Memorial contributions may be made to the American Cancer Society and American Lung Association. Lucille E. Summers, 94, of Decatur, formerly of Stonington, Illinois, died Wednesday, April 13, 2016. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, April 16th, at Brentlinger and Earl Funeral Home, Decatur, with visitation from 5:30 to 8 p.m. today at the funeral home. Burial will be in the Old Stonington Cemetery, Stonington, Illinois. Memorials may be made to the American Heart Association or Cancer Care Specialists of Decatur. Max Eugene Carey, 77, of Iliopolis, died Sunday, April 10, 2016. Visitation will be from 1 p.m. until the time of the memorial service at 3 p.m. on at Fullenwider Park Funeral Home in Iliopolis. Memorial contributions may be made to the Iliopolis Fire Department. Fullenwider Park Funeral Home of Iliopolis is in charge of arrangements. And now we'll turn to the opinion page for and read letters to the editor for April 15th. Gleason is failing to build positive relationships. I don't personally know any of the people involved in the Tim Gleason-Brad Sweeney case. However, I am backing Sweeney. Sweeney, a 20-year veteran police officer named police chief in January 2015 to enforce the law, had no problem managing his department. Then we have a city manager, who was hired 2 months later. Listed number one on Gleason's goals and projects for Decatur was building relationships with the community. Note that he did not specify positive relationships. In his first year, he fired the police chief for reasons having nothing to do with job performance. He cites other reasons for termination, but will not disclose them. Obviously not job-related. City attorneys want the lawsuit thrown out because Sweeney did not take action at the time, and that the car ride was not a breach of city rules, though it should be. A reminder to the mayor, city council, and city manager, you all work for me and all the other taxpayers of this city. You are not doing your jobs in the best interest of the people of Decatur. Free rides to the airport for vacation are not a perk on the job here. Department heads disagreeing with the city manager is not a reason for termination. With this lack of city management experience, obviously, Mr. Gleason requires conflict resolution classes for further management training. Signed, Peg Gaines, Decatur. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Thumbs up and welcome to Sagosi and Capenda, two new cheetah brothers that joined Scoville Zoo last week. The two brothers received from the Smithsonian Conservation Biology Institute in Virginia, will be housed near but separately from longtime zoo inhabitant Jafari. At 14, Jafari has already surpassed the average lifespan for cheetahs in captivity, and his brother, Runako, died in September. Jafari and the two new brothers might be housed together sometime in the near future once everyone gets acquainted. Thumbs up to Julius Hugh Hagler II of Danville, who recently pledged $2 million to Millikan University's new Center for Theater and Dance. Hagler's donation, payable upon his death, raised the amount earmarked for the new center to $11.2 million. Hagler said he made the donation because he had a good experience as a student at Millikan and because President Pat White visited with him about the donation more than once. The teachers were good to me. So it's also what I call payback time, Hagler said. Thumbs up to the Macon County University Extension Office for coordinating the Mini Maker Fair last week. The intent of the event, which is in its second year, is to bring together people who have a passion for doing things themselves. Demonstrations at the event included creation of handmade holiday cards, detergent, a plastic Eiffel Tower built with a 3D printer, and a smoothie in a blender powered by a bicycle rider. More than 500 people attended the demonstrations. Thumbs down to the state of Illinois, which is in trouble with federal regulators for failing to pay companies that remove leaky fuel tanks from the ground. The state's budget fiasco has delayed payment to a lot of vendors, but the federal government isn't happy that companies that remove tanks aren't being paid and warned that the state that if payment wasn't made soon, gas station owners would have to foot the bill. It's just another example of how our dysfunctional state government is failing at its most basic duties. Thumbs up to the Harlem Wizards and several Decatur School District faculty and staff members for putting on a fundraiser last week. The Wizards, a traveling team that works exclusively for charity events, played an exhibition game against teachers and staff members to raise money for Dennis School and John's Hill Magnet School. Such an event takes a lot of effort to pull off, and teachers and staff members from other Decatur schools were more than willing to help out. Thumbs up to Big Sister Gretchen Karcher, who is in the 2016 Big Sister of the Year, who is the 2016 Big Sister of the Year for Illinois. It's the third consecutive year that Big Brothers Big Sisters of Central Illinois has garnered statewide honors for one of its matches. Karcher is matched with little sister Brianna DeBerry. In education, preschoolers consider career goals. Decatur. It's never too early to think about the future. When Latanza Lee asked the 4- and 5-year-olds in her preschool class at Effie Oliver Child and Family Center what they wanted to be when they grew up, many already had answers. While a few offered suggested, such as superhero, most gravitated toward more realistic professions. I was actually surprised, Lee said. We have some bright kids in here, though. Careers were chosen as the theme to celebrate the Week of the Young Child in Lee's classroom, which is part of the Anna Waters Head Start program. Doctor, police officer, and firefighter were the top 3 choices. One little girl wanted to be a football player, another a cheerleader, another a princess. On Thursday, the children ended the week by dressing, quite literally, for the jobs they want. Rainy D's, 4, wanted to be a police officer because they arrest bad guys. Ayana Small, 5, wants to be a doctor, inspired by her mother's work at McKinley Court Care Center. She helps people, Ayana said. She has friends there. For the week, the classroom was divided into different stations, such as construction zone, post office, dance studio, and stations for science and art. The kids moved between them in self-directed play, sometimes related to their desired careers. Several girls dressed as doctors were eager to help offer a checkup to a visitor, even going so far as to seek play money for payment. On Monday, Officer Kimberly Cheney of the Decatur Police Department visited the group to talk about her job. Katie Gross, head of the Children's Division at the Decatur Public Library, did the same Wednesday. Gross read the children a selection of books related to careers, including Lola at the Library, Don't Let the Pigeon Drive the Bus, and The Baby, BB Bird. The kids were very responsive, she said. They pretty much wanted every book read over again. Lee said the career theme was suggested by the parents and took little ingenuity to execute, but ultimately paid off. This is different, very different for us. We normally do a Mexican theme or a sports theme, she said. This is the first time with the career theme. Now, it was quite fun. On biz, Mosquito Joe is now on patrol. The owners of a business serving the Decatur area are hoping to make outside fun again with the return of warm weather. Michelle and Jeff Summers have brought the Mosquito Joe franchise to the Decatur and Springfield market. It's part of a nationwide company. Mosquitoes can ruin outdoor fun and expose people and pets to insect-borne disease, Michelle Summers said. It's got to the point where we couldn't bring our younger son outside, she said. I was really intrigued by the concept. They believe in helping people have fun outside. Not every yard is the same, Jeff Summers said. Custom solutions are available after a site assessment with the treatment available for mosquitoes, ticks, and fleas, he said. Standing water is one thing in particular that should be eliminated from yards in order to lessen the number of mosquitoes, Jeff Summers said. The business plans on serving residential customers in addition to places such as schools, golf courses, and restaurants that offer outdoor dining, Michelle Summers said. Wooded areas are especially in need of treatment, she said. The best form of prevention is to set up a regular spraying schedule with an all-natural treatment option available, Michelle Summers said. Regular treatment can be 95% effective at eliminating mosquitoes, she said. The business also offers treatment services ahead of special events, Michelle Summers said. For more information, go to... go to springfield.mosquitojoe.com. Find Mosquito Joe, Springfield, Illinois, on Facebook or call 217-717-4789. That's 717-4789. And some more state news. Group Illinois Historic Sites at risk due to unsure economy. Springfield, 11 schools, churches, mansions, courthouses, and other historic Illinois sites highlighted on an annual preservation report are particularly vulnerable because of an unsure economic climate in the state, and the impasse over the state's budget makes funding uncertain, the group says. Local governments and institutions own many of the sites. Bonnie McDonald, president of the historic preservation group Landmarks Illinois, said Thursday. But municipalities and counties are nervous about releasing any funding to save the buildings because they're not sure if they will receive their state appropriations, she said. Illinois has been operating without a budget for the current fiscal year since July. We're hearing concerns about the future of the state and the state budget, McDonald said. The group released its annual list Wednesday, which included schools in Rockford, Champaign, and Highland Park, a YMCA building in Springfield, and a youth facility in St. Charles, as well as St. Aldebert Church in Chicago, the Harley Clark Mansion in Evanston, and more. Landmarks in Illinois report said that the sites also faced challenges because of the slow economic recovery in many communities and a lack of financing. McDonald said the Massac County Courthouse, which is on this year's list, is struggling because the county is seeing revenue declines from the state and lower property taxes. We're seeing these really tough decisions that have to be made, McDonald said. McDonald said the group is trying to highlight opportunities to save the buildings and raise the profile of the conversation about how public and private partnership can help. Landmarks Illinois has been putting out an annual endangered historic places list since 1995. The group says that since then, a third of the listed properties have been saved and fewer than a quarter have been demolished. Let's read a bit from the Decatur Tribune. City Beat, Paul Osborne City Beat. Former Decatur Police Chief is supportive of fired Police Chief Brad Sweeney. Retired Decatur Police Chief Mark Bartolome has issued a letter to the editor in support of fired Decatur Police Chief Brad Sweeney. The letter, which also posted in the Letters to the Editor section of this website, will be posted in the print edition of next week's print edition of the Decatur Tribune. It states, I retired from the Decatur Police Department after completing 30 years of service. I rose through the ranks from patrolman to chief of police. As this city's police chief, I worked under a previous city manager. Although the city manager and I had differences of opinions, and there were some things I refused to do because I felt it was not in the best interest of the police department, I was never disciplined, never fired, and certainly was never challenged over my integrity or judgment. I worked with Brad Sweeney for the last 10 of my 30 years. He was honest, reliable, and he carefully guarded the image his bad represented in the eyes of the public, as well as the reputation of the department. The city manager had other options to deal with what he has alleged as infractions on Sweeney's part. He could have suspended the chief for 5 days or more. The council has indicated that it is not their job to become involved with personnel matters and that the authority for such belongs exclusively to the city manager. I disagree. The positions of the police and fire chief are very different from other department heads. Brad Sweeney is also a taxpayer. Does he have no right to individual meetings with the council members to air his side of the matter? Just give him the courtesy of listening. What background investigation was undertaken before the council hired the city manager? Who conducted what investigation? Based on what I know of the situation, if I were a betting man on where the honesty lies in the current situation, my money would be on the chief. What happens during some city council meetings can never be anticipated by the mayor. Russell Schulke, a regular speaker during the Decatur City Council's appearance of citizens session at each council meeting, offered something new at the last meeting that no one expected and will never forget. Schulke was speaking about the history of the public library when he hesitated and collapsed with an apparent cardiac arrest. Fortunately for Schulke, top city officials were sitting near him and rushed to his side. City Councilman Dr. Dana Ray and Fire Chief Jeff Abbott administered CPR, and an automated external defibrillator saved his life. He was transported to the hospital, where the last report indicated that he is recovering from the incident. Kudos to Dr. Ray, Abbott, City Manager Tim Gleason, Interim Police Chief Jim Getz, and other city officials for responding so quickly. The most important action taken at that council meeting was the saving of a man's life. It's reasonable to assume that had Mr. Schulke been somewhere else that Monday night, he could have passed away. Despite the intensity that sometimes comes with subjects debated and voted on at city council meetings, it might be the safest place outside of a hospital to have a medical emergency. I'm sure when Mr. Schulke returns to address council, his subject will be appreciation for the action taken to save his life. A similar incident. The incident with Russell Schulke reminds me of a time when I was mayor when a similar situation occurred, although not as serious. Craig Coyle, who was the head of the Economic Development Corporation, EDC, was making a presentation to the council, and after speaking for a few minutes, he paused and looked as if he was going to pass out. I asked him if he was okay, and I remember his two-word reply, "Not really." He backed off a few feet and was able to make it to one of the seats in the front row while others immediately rushed to help him. An ambulance was called, and he was transported to the hospital, where he checked out okay. He was somewhat embarrassed by what had happened and explained that the day had been filled with meetings and he'd been so busy that he hadn't eaten and was lightheaded as a result. Fortunately, it wasn't something major. The fake drop-dead routine. A fake medical emergency happened somewhat routinely during the years I chaired the council meetings when David Dacre would appear before the city council and speak out on drive-through liquor sales. Dacre would ask the question, "How drunk can you be and still buy liquor at a drive-up liquor window?" Then, to demonstrate his point, he would fall to the floor and his legs and feet would go up in the air before coming down to show that a person could be dead drunk and still buy liquor at a drive-up liquor window. First time it happened, it got everybody's attention. After the first time, every time he did that, or something similar, everyone just assumed it was the same demonstration and didn't pay much attention to it. I wonder what would have happened if he was really having a medical emergency, and those who could help thought it was another dead drunk act. Well, that's not likely to happen. Dacre moved to another state a few years ago, and I haven't heard from him since. But I suspect he attends city council meetings in the community where he moved. Changing perception of Decatur is limitless task. Our front page carries the story that Decatur's crime rates have decreased over the past 20 years and compares them to other metropolitan areas in central Illinois. Nicole Bateman, community marketing manager with the Economic Development Corporation of Decatur and Macon County, did a solid job of revealing those statistics at last Thursday's community leaders breakfast. I'm not sure you can read all of the small print in the statistical chart, which I had to reduce down to make it fit on the front page, but the drop in crime in our community should reassure residents and those looking to come to Decatur that conditions are improving. Of course, a few people are in denial of anything factual that doesn't fit how they feel about crime or any other issue. The bottom line for our community, or any community, is how safe people feel and who live here. The difficult part of any campaign to improve a community's image is not presenting facts that show the community is much safer than it was 20 years ago, but to break an almost inbred feeling that Decatur is not safe. Getting people to feel safe through presenting the facts that should make them feel safer is a long-term process. Even though statistics and facts show Decatur is a safer place than it was 20 years ago, to educate residents about the quality of life here, most people judge how safe it is by how safe they feel, not by what statistics indicate. However, publicizing the good news about Decatur is a great step forward and hopefully will help shape the image of our community as we move forward. Also in the Decatur Tribune Online, Mac on Sports. Brilly named Morton football coach. Tim Brilly was named Morton's new football head coach tonight by the Potters school board at their meeting. In an exclusive telephone interview while en route home, Brilly informed Morton just invested $5 million in new athletic facilities, including a new artificial surface. There's a ton of potential here, said Brilly, who isn't afraid of challenges, since he's been facing them his entire life, including his days of competing for St. Teresa under former Hall of Fame coach Scott Davis and succeeding him at his alma mater. This is a great fit for me, Julie, and our family, said Brilly about the opportunity that came about when a Macon County administrator strongly recommended him to the Morton Athletic Director, Scott Jones. They're hungry to win here, informed Brilly, of having to compete in the rugged Mid-Illini Conference, where perennial powers Washington and Metamora compete along with Bartonville, Limestone, Canton, Dunlap, East Peoria, and Pekin. They're going to continue to grow and are running out of room, said Brilly in his new school that is located outside Peoria and close to Bloomington. He's inheriting a program that has struggled in recent years with three straight losing seasons. Morton's enrollment is 885, according to the Illinois High School Association website. This is an exciting place to be right now, said Brilly. He resigned his St. Teresa football position at the end of last fall after five seasons as head coach there after succeeding the legendary Davis, whose name is one of three for whom the field was dedicated, with the others being Ed Boehm and Dick Munn. He departs St. Teresa with an overall one-loss record of 28-21 and four playoff appearances. I will have more on this developing story in a future print edition of the Decatur Tribune. In news from here and there, Richland students contribute to facility and curriculum design. Decatur. A gift of $1.7 million from the estate of Dell and Evelyn Carroll set the stage for a community fundraising campaign and a new and innovative process for the design of facilities on the campus of Richland Community College. The Carroll Center for Enterprise and Innovation will be developed through a process BLDD has proposed called Design Thinking and involves five steps. Discovery. review of exemplar facilities with Richland faculty members, students, administration, and community members. Empathy. BLDD will observe Richland class sessions to gain an understanding of how the current environment responds to 21st century educational needs. Ideate. BLDD will develop and refine concepts through a public charrette process, ideally resulting in 2 to 3 preferred concepts. Prototyping. Mock-up spaces designed to facilitate the changes discovered during the previous stages. Observe the functionality and efficiency of these spaces for the design concept. Testing. The college will test the preferred concept prototypes through the use of spaces for a yet-to-be-determined time frame. BLDD will collect information on successes and failures of each prototype and present summary to college. Students are participating in the ideate process by providing feedback to BLDD architects and designers about what is currently working well on Richland's campus and what improvements could be made to create an ideal learning environment. This physical construction for the Carroll Center for Enterprise and Innovation will include portions of the second floor of the South Wing, as well as a new entry into the space. Simultaneously, Richland will improve and revise curricula to reflect current technology, trends, and the needs of local businesses. The foundation for the improved curricula will be project-based, thus engaging students' minds in working through business-based project in a collaborative manner, producing scalable outcomes. Most importantly, project-based learning will be applicable to all disciplines at Richland Community College. Larry Foster, chairman of the Richland Community College Foundation Capital Campaign, said, "Our vision is to create a student-centered business education program with advanced technology and collaborative learning spaces that will provide students with a realistic business-simulated environment." Early last year, the Richland Community College Foundation launched a community-wide fundraising campaign aimed toward transforming the college's business education center. To date, approximately $3.5 million has been raised in support for this project. Veteran prosecutor joins the Macon County State's Attorney's Office. Macon County State's Attorney Jay Scott has announced that veteran prosecutor John Fisher has been hired as an assistant Macon County State's Attorney. He will serve as lead prosecutor of the Gang and Weapons Prosecution Unit and will prosecute homicide and other serious violent crimes. A Decatur native, Fisher is a graduate of Quincy University and St. Louis University School of Law. He served as an assistant state's attorney in Madison County, Illinois, from 2004 to 2015. During his final 2.5 years there, he held the position of chief of the criminal division, supervising 8 felony assistant state's attorneys, the head of the misdemeanor division, and the attorneys assigned to Veterans Court, Drug Court, and Mental Health Court. He has extensive trial experience, including the prosecution of homicides, violent crimes, drug, sex, and white-collar offenses. In 2015, his outstanding work both in and out of the courtroom, John received the Prosecutor Award for the Southwestern Illinois Law Enforcement Commission and the Southern Illinois Police Chiefs Association. In addition, he served on the Madison County Child Advocacy Center's Accreditation Board. Fisher's been an associate attorney with the firm of Featherston, Gaumer, Postlewaite, Stocks, Flynn, and Hubbard in Decatur since July 2015. Macon County is extremely fortunate to have someone of John Fisher's caliber as a prosecutor, Scott said. We're very excited to have him joining the office. He has an outstanding trial record and extensive experience prosecuting violent criminals. He's a great addition to the office and will definitely help us keep Macon County safe. That's all we have time for with the April 15th edition of the Decatur Herald and Review and the Decatur Tribune. This is Barbara Ridenour. I look forward to reading with you again soon. Have a great week.